Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link on this Friday, the 29th of September. Glad to have you on board. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. Remember, we are live on Facebook. Just go to our page, DW Africa, and follow the show. Click, comment, share.
In today's program, Cameroon deploys troops to English-speaking regions to stop separatists from declaring their independence on October 1st. But observers say this might worsen the situation.
I do not think that it is their duty to go on harassing people at this moment because it is exacerbating the situation further.
Today is World Heart Day. We will be hearing concerns from heart specialists in Kenya on the increasing number of people being diagnosed with heart diseases.
In spite of the fact that you may not drink, you may not smoke, you are taking very healthy diet, you run around, but still you get it because it is there in your gene. So these are the patients who should go to a doctor. They should have the checkup at a very early age.
This story is plus your responses coming up.
But let's first listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Sarah Steffen with DW News. Iraq's central government has ordered a halt of all international flights in and out of Iraqi Kurdistan. The last commercial flight left the airport on Friday afternoon. This comes after Monday's independence referendum, in which over 90% of voters were in favor of an independent Kurdistan. A suicide bomber in Kabul, Afghanistan, killed 5 people and wounded 29 others on Friday, authorities said. The attacker disguised himself as a shepherd and blew himself up near a Shiite mosque. Terror group so-called Islamic State, or IS, has claimed responsibility for the attack. Afghanistan has been rocked by a number of attacks in recent months, targeting the minority Shiite population. Just last month, IS claimed it was responsible for storming a Shiite mosque in Kabul, killing at least 20 and wounding 50 others. A stampede in India's commercial hub Mumbai on Friday morning killed at least 22 people and injured 32 others. Police are investigating the cause of the stampede, which led some commuters to leap over the railing of a pedestrian bridge. Others were crushed or fell and were then trampled. A sudden monsoon downpour caused even more people to rush towards a pedestrian bridge for cover. Police also said panic broke out when falling concrete hit part of the bridge railing as it led to fears the bridge was collapsing. People said a new skywalk had been planned but not come to fruition yet.
The ministers and railway authorities have the letter of approval for the new skywalk, but so far it's not been implemented, for which we are still fighting.
Former German Chancellor Gerhard Schröder has been appointed chairman of the board of Russian oil giant Rosneft. That controversial move has drawn criticism both from Chancellor Angela Merkel and the leadership of Schröder's own party, the Social Democrats. The European Union has imposed sanctions against state-owned Rosneft for the past 3 years over Russia's role in the Ukraine crisis. Schröder says he doesn't see anything wrong with accepting the job.
I stand by my decision because I think that it is not politically or economically reasonable to isolate our largest neighbor, Russia, politically and economically.
Schröder already heads the Shareholders Committee for state-controlled company Nord Stream. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The U.S. is warning its citizens not to travel to Cuba and is pulling out more than half of its diplomatic staff. This comes after quote-unquote specific attacks on U.S. diplomats and their families that have left some with hearing loss, dizziness, and other health problems. Several Canadians have also been affected. Cuba has denied any role and is investigating the incidents. A Kenyan watchdog said it was investigating if police had attacked students at the University of Nairobi this week during protests over the arrest of an opposition politician. Video circulated on social media showed police officers hitting people inside classrooms and outside dorms. It was the latest crackdown on opposition protests. A rerun of presidential elections is due to be held on October 26th. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Sarah Steffen.
You are listening to Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. We begin in Cameroon, which has deployed thousands of troops to the English-speaking north and southwest regions to stop separatist groups from declaring their independence on October 1st this year. The youth are ignoring calls for peace by political party leaders and civil society groups and have gone ahead to attack public buildings and hoisting what they call the flag of their independent state. Moki Kinzeka traveled to Ekok at the Cameroon border with Nigeria and sent us this report.
That is the sound of at least 700 people, mostly the youth, shouting and attacking government buildings and police stations at the Cameroonian border town of Ekok. They say they are already preparing for the independence of their new state called Ambazonia, which will be officially proclaimed on the 1st of October. 27-year-old Tambe Elias, who poses as their leader, says they no longer recognize Cameroon President Paul Biya as their leader.
He is nobody, and he will never mean anything to the Ambazonians. This is the border between Southern Cameroon and the Republic of Nigeria. At the front here, I come. You can see the flag. This is the borders. Now they have closed the border. They don't want us to cross to Nigeria. But we are there. We must go.
They tried to cross over to the Nigeria border state of Enugu to inform authorities there that a new nation has been born, but were blocked by the Nigerian immigration police. The protesters then returned to Ekok. They sang this song they called their national anthem after chasing all Cameroonian government workers, including custom officers and the police, and hoisting a blue and white flag. The separatists have promised to declare their independence on October 1st and have appointed Julius Ayuk Tabe, who is in exile, as their interim leader. In reaction to this, Cameroon has deployed troops to major towns in the English-speaking regions to stop all demonstrators, but observers say the separatists may be relocating to smaller regions like Ekok, where the military is not yet present. French-speaking Cameroonian Dibong Ignatius says the presence of the military can worsen the crisis.
Men in uniform and the police surrounded our neighborhood and entered homes, demanding the residents to bring out the Ambazonian flags that they were hiding. I do not think that it is their duty to go on harassing people at this moment, because it is exacerbating the situation further.
Almost all English-speaking ministers and senior state functionaries working in Yaoundé have been sent back home by President Biya to educate the population not to accept separatist ideas.
Moki Kinzeka reporting. And Cameroon's President Paul Biya has told the separatists that he is not open for any negotiation on the form of the state and that Cameroon is one and indivisible.
Well, Eunice, at this stage, we'd like to welcome those following us on Facebook Live. And of course, I'm more than glad to read some of your comments that you're saying on this particular story. Someone called, Ogechuku said, "Mr. Paul Biya, we need our independence right now without Father Addo."
Yes, we also have quite a number of people, like, for example, Kamara Freddy, who are saying, yes, freedom. Most of them are saying, we want freedom.
Muhammadu Amadu from Cameroon says they have the right to do whatever they're doing because the government of Cameroon refuses dialogue with them on separation of the two states.
We will surely come back to your comments later on in the program. So
yes,
keep them coming.
Whenever we can, indeed. Now, EU leaders are meeting in the Estonian capital of Tallinn for talks on Europe's digital future. It's the first EU summit entirely dedicated to digitalization, an area where Europe hopes to be a global leader. Estonia is one of the smallest EU members, with a population of 1.3 million people, but one that punches well above its weight when it comes to technology and innovation. DW's Max Hoffman is in the capital, Tallinn, and he tells us what's expected from this summit at the end of the day.
Estonia has its own agenda. They basically are trying to convince the rest of the European Union that what they're doing here in the small country is the right way to go and should be transferred to other countries. Now, the big countries, France, Italy, Spain, Germany, have a slightly different agenda, although they're open to what Estonia has to say here. But they are predominantly talking about taxation of digital companies like Amazon, like Google, because as of now, they're mainly taxed where they reside, at their headquarters. And the European Commission and the institutions have a plan to tax them where they make their revenues, which would bring more tax money to the European Union, because as we just saw, most of those countries do not reside in the European Union, but in the US and China.
Right. Max, why is it that Estonia appears to be so ahead of the pack when it comes to digital infrastructure?
We put that question to the president of Estonia yesterday. We had the chance to have a chat with her, and she said the first thing she said is because Estonians don't like queues. They don't like standing in line. You know, this was part of the Soviet Union decades ago, and back then you had to stand in line for basically everything, to get your food, to get your drink, to do any kind of thing. And she said that's why this idea of being able to do everything online, to having a public service online, and like we just heard in that report, you know, even founding a company in only 20 minutes went down very well with Estonians. It's the other reason, of course, is they had to look for a business model. They don't have oil, they don't have gas. They thought this would be the future, and it has a good size to try something like that.
Max Hoffmann in Estonian capital Tallinn.
Now, as the world marks World Heart Day today, a number of African countries are recording an increase in adults living with rheumatic and coronary heart diseases. In Kenya, the situation is no different. Heart specialists in the country are concerned about the number of people being diagnosed with heart diseases. This is attributed to their sedentary lifestyle, as Rhoda Odhiambo reports.
If you looked at 21-year-old Billy Carrier 2 years ago, you'd think he was suffering from an unknown disease. He had a swollen heart, he was thin, and he used to run out of breath all the time. He did not even have a proper childhood. All he did was stay at home and watch his peers play football through the window.
My heart used to beat very fast and loud, and someone could even see it beating and hear it as well. It used to beat at 100 beats per minute.
Like 100 beats per minute.
Because it was difficult for him to concentrate in class, Billy dropped out of school in 2009 when he was just 12 years old and has never stepped in a classroom since then.
Everything was hard after I dropped out of school. I just stayed home, no playing with other kids.
He was diagnosed with an enlarged heart in November 2015 and was operated on immediately, failure to which he would have experienced a heart failure. Billy shares the same script with 7-year-old Angel Nyongesa. She, on the other hand, did not acquire a heart problem but was born with it. The family found out that she had a hole in her heart in November last year. According to cardiothoracic vascular surgeon Premadan Pronoth, Kenyans who have sedentary lifestyles and a family history are potential candidates of getting a heart disease. He says such patients need to go for annual checkups as well as change their lifestyles.
In spite of the fact that you may not drink, you may not smoke, you are taking very healthy diet, you run around, but still you get it because it is there in your genes. So these are the patients who should go to a doctor. They should have the checkup in at a very early age. Early means 30 years old. Or if they have some symptoms, they should go.
Symptoms of heart diseases include pain or tightness in the chest that lasts longer than 5 minutes, pain in the arm that radiates down to the left side of the body, extreme exhaustion or unexplained weakness, and swollen ankles, legs, and feet. Specialist Pranoth also urges adults not to ignore sore throats, as this also increases their chances of them getting a heart disease later on in life.
Rhoda Odhiambo with that report.
And we have some comments here. Daniel Wanyama from Kenya says, here life is not so easy and some extant things to do with health are somehow hard to keep an eye on. Now, Eunice, one of our followers, El Shaddai in Accra, Ghana, has a question. He asks, do sore throats cause heart problems?
Well, a throat infection that isn't properly treated can trigger rheumatic fever, El Shaddai. This rheumatic fever can damage heart muscle and heart valves, leading to heart problems. But of course, it is best to see a doctor for proper assessment.
And Charles Ongole says, Uganda is not different from Kenya. Our republics would treat their people better if medics cared. Many thanks for your comments. Welcome back once again to the program. And in case you've just joined us, this is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. You can also join us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We are live. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will hear from Farai Sam Monroe, a Zimbabwean comedian and civic activist based in Harare, known for poking at the state and its leaders. Take a listen.
Last year, we had some very fiery stand-up comedy happening. The police wanted to arrest us and the comedians because they were saying we were threatening to kill the president.
And we have more comments on what you've been saying about Cameroon deploying security forces in English-speaking regions ahead of the planned declaration of independence this Sunday.
And Eunice, some of these comments are just, you know, I mean, live coming from our Facebook page, DW Africa. Many people are commenting and they're listening. Keep sending those comments.
Yes.
And we'll read them live here on Africa Link. But before all that, Germany will this weekend mark 60 years of cooperation with Ghana. The Germans in Accra, where the celebrations are scheduled to take place tomorrow, hope to showcase their culture and strengthen the already existing ties between the two countries. In Ghana, many youth have been thronging the German Cultural Center, which is known as the Goethe Institute, to learn the German language. From Accra, Isaac Kalechi sent this report.
I am standing outside the Goethe Institute in Accra's residential area. That is the center for German culture and several projects that bind Germans and Ghanaians together. At the center, young Ghanaians, fascinated about the German culture, come to inquire about learning the German language with the hope that language skills will help them once they travel to Germany for further studies.
I want to be able to speak another language. If you understand somebody's language, it's easy for you to understand the people.
I like the language. It's very interesting. And also secondary, my partner is there too.
I want to, latest by next year, go to Germany and continue my education there through my bachelor's degree, master's and...
In central Accra, I meet Germany's ambassador to Ghana, Christoph Retzlaff, who talks about the significance of this relationship.
Ghana, for us, is one of our key partners in Africa. Ghana is stable, a stabilizing factor for the whole region of West Africa. And Ghana has a lot of economic potential. You have a lot of young, creative people, so there's a lot of potential in this country. And what we want to achieve together with Ghana in our cooperation is that Ghana will be able to really live up to its potential.
Ambassador Retzlaff thinks it's important for the youth to take a leading role in Ghana's economic growth.
We are of the opinion that it will be, of course, the young generation who will be shaping the future of Ghana in the next 20, 30 years. That is why we have started for the first time, for instance, a program to support Ghanaian startups. We are also expanding our program in vocational training here. We are already doing a lot, but we want to be to do more.
Cultural and media workshops, showing of German movies, display of the German culture, among others, are part of the activities lined up for Saturday's celebrations. Yibo Kojo Yibo is a Ghanaian culture analyst who said the celebrations must help Ghana reflect on German culture and the way of life.
I'm a little familiar with the Goethe Institute here in Ghana and how much more they put emphasis on educational programs and then also for culture, which it's also very visible when you come here and also when you watch Deutsche Welle TV.
That report was compiled by Isaac Kalechi in Accra, Ghana.
Blog report.
Farai Sam Monroe, also known as Comrade Fatso, is a blogger, comedian and civic activist based in Harare. He is the director of Magamba Network, producers of Zambezi News, an online political satire TV series. Comrade Fatso also leads the Shoko Festival, an urban culture festival which presents shows that have attracted the attention of the censorship board. DW's Privilege Mushaniri had a chance to meet with him and wanted to hear of his experience in running such a festival.
Shoko is definitely a space where we try and bring together, you know, arts and culture with new media and digital and activism. And it's very much a space that's about celebrating free expression. So in terms of the experience of running it, on the one hand, it's great because, you know, you get thousands of young people coming through, really inspiring performances that take place and some amazing speakers at the conference we hold there also. But of course, on the flip side, we've got a lot of political content. You've got a lot of very outspoken young artists who perform there. There is definitely, you know, blowback that you do get from the state. So, I mean, every year putting it on is quite a feat. The police last year, because we had some very fiery comedy, stand-up comedy happening, the police wanted to arrest us and the comedians last year because they were saying we were threatening to kill the president. But it was a joke that one comedian made, saying in Zimbabwe we're not ready to have our own currency because we don't have a dead president yet to put on the currency, you know. So, you know, it's but it's fun. I mean, you know, this is Zimbabwe.
How many of your acts, or how many of your, some of the things that you have had to censor out of the content that maybe probably some of the artists who come to Shoko present?
I think the thing is we encourage artists to, you know, to be free and speak their mind. So register with censorship board, but get on stage and do your thing.
Mm-hmm. So many civic engagement and mobilization has happened because of social media, your Facebook, your Twitter. Mm-hmm. And we have Pastor Ivan right now who is standing trial because he's using social media to mobilize the masses to speak out against the government. And most of your skits and your content often goes up on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And the government is planning to bring up the cyber bill. How worried are you in terms of its impact on the work that you do, even the blogging scene in Zimbabwe?
I think one definitely has to be worried, especially for those of us here who work a lot online, who use social media and citizen journalism as a means to express ourselves and to, you know, communicate to young people. It is worrying. I mean, we're still to see the latest draft, but, you know, the last draft had very vague definitions of cyber terrorism. Even though cyber terrorism could be anything from someone who hacks into state security to someone who's a citizen journalist.
This year, the running theme for the festival, Shoko Festival, Utopia.
Yeah.
What's the idea behind it?
Well, I think in Zim, we're going through such a crazy time that with the festival, we're really wanting to create this space where people can find their joy, where they can express themselves, where they're free to be who they want to be. So really creating this amazing kind of utopian vibe at the festival.
Farai Sam Monroe speaking to DW's Privilege Mushaniri.
And as usual on Friday, we can't let you go for a weekend without giving you another dose of sports. Joining us now is DW's sports editor Chuck Penfold.
Well, beginning this Friday, we got an interesting clash between Schalke and Bayer Leverkusen. Neither one having got off to the greatest start this season. Schalke in seventh place. Bayer Leverkusen had a worse start. So this one could go either way, but I think maybe I'd give the edge to Schalke here. A few interesting games that are between teams that are very close on the table, like tomorrow Eintracht Frankfurt and Stuttgart, they're 11th and 12th. Then there's Wolfsburg Mainz, they're 13th, 14th. But I think what everybody is really looking forward to this weekend is the first game that Bayern play without Carlo Ancelotti. That's in Hertha, at Hertha in Berlin on Sunday. That's the big one. We're all wondering if the new coach, Willy Sagnol, is going to give them a boost.
Yes, indeed. Still on that point on about Carlo Ancelotti, Bayern Munich sacked him after he lost the Champions League game against Paris Saint-Germain. What could be the reasons for his sacking, and did it surprise you anyway?
You know, I did the game on Wednesday night, and, you know, it was the lineup that he put up, I think, that really sunk him. His idea was to clog up the middle because of the potent attack of Paris Saint-Germain. So leaving Ribéry and Robin out on the wings, you could sort of understand. But the fact that he left two of his best central defenders, Mats Hummels and Jerome Boateng, just puzzled everybody. And as soon as I saw it, I said, he's damaged himself at Bayern. I didn't think he would get sacked the next day. I thought he's definitely not going to be there at the end of the season. And I thought maybe at the end of the first round, because Bayern don't like to sack somebody that quickly.
Yeah, it must have been a sad day for the Bayern Munich fans, especially in the Bavarian region. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't expect this. You know, I thought, I didn't expect the lineup either. Let's be clear. But I didn't expect these guys. They were coming in waves on the counterattack. Mm. Bayern had a lot of the ball. They had 18 corners. They had much more of the ball, but they were never dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well said then. How big a task does his replacement, Willy Sagnol, got ahead of the Sunday game with Hertha Berlin and, of course, the next Champions League games?
You know, basically, he's only got a couple of days of training to get them ready for Hertha. It's looking like he's probably not going to be there very long. He's going to be on the bench on Sunday. By all accounts, he's got the respect of the players. He's a former, you know, fairly long-time player at Bayern. So I found his appointment as assistant coach in the summer quite interesting, because it gave me the idea that Ancelotti is maybe not quite, you know, as Bavarian as he needed to be. And this was a guy, as is Salihamidzic, who came in as the sporting director, who Bayern were maybe a little more comfortable with because of his history. So I think he'll this will probably give the team a boost on Sunday, because there were lots of rumors that Ancelotti was in at loggerheads with at least five of his key players. So that should release things for Bayern on Sunday, and I expect the victory.
That was DW's sports editor Chuck Penfold giving us his insight on the games that are going to take place this weekend, starting this evening.
Yes, Isaac, and as we promised earlier on, we will cover your comments on Cameroon. Cameroon has deployed security forces in the English-speaking regions ahead of their planned declaration of independence this Sunday. And we would like to acknowledge everyone who is listening to us live on Facebook. I can see Bra Ken is writing, listening live and clear from Accra, Ghana. Thank you very much for listening. We have so many comments coming in from Cameroon. Gia Nde is one of them, and he's saying all we want is dialogue.
And someone who goes by the name Mazi Michael says Ambazonia awakening is incomplete without Biafra. Expected that.
Yes.
Kwasi Ochere from Ghana says, I think all these problems going on in Cameroon are as a result of political speeches by some politicians.
And David from Malaysia saying, if other people are gaining their independence once they ask for freedom, now what is wrong with African people getting the same freedom in their own land? I have seen nothing wrong about people asking for their independence to determine their future.
Jakob Janabo says he's listening from Malmo. Oh, that is Sweden. Many thanks. Welcome on board. And Mazi Michelle says, for sure, free Southern Cameroon.
Yes, we also have comments here from Camp S.A. George from Nigeria. He's saying dialogue and negotiations are the options for peaceful resolution. Caleb Chauro in Nairobi says, Kenya says all that's happening in Cameroon is as a result of not including, hearing and respecting each other. It's not good for a nation to be divided, but if it will bring peace to both parties, let it be peaceful.
And Camp S. George from Nigeria says dialogue and negotiations are the options for peaceful resolutions.
Well, another last one here from Jude, a Nigerian living in Germany, saying just like what is going on in Nigeria, Biafra, when some people think that the country belongs to them alone, this is always the problem.
Terry Tanifom says he's listening from America. All you want is the restoration of our homeland, that is Southern Cameroon. For those just listening to us, this is DW's Africa Link program live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. And Jude, a Nigerian living in Germany, says, just like what is going on in Nigeria, Biafra, when some people think that the country belongs to them alone, this is always the problem.
And Onyia Obina says, I'm listening from Abuja, Nigeria, free Southern Cameroon now.
Comments are still coming in, and, you know, we always told them, we'll always read these comments whenever we can. We appreciate the fact that you've visited our page and you've listened live. Many thanks for those who've joined us. And on behalf of the entire production crew with us here in the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Onjiro, wishing you a great weekend ahead.